Well, we appreciate Scott Boras and Blake Snell signing in time last night, John, so we could talk about it on the show today.
Absolutely. I don't think we ever expected a Cy Young winner to go this late in spring training, but it is done. He has been throwing, so maybe he will be available fairly early in the season. And great job by the Giants, and a bit of a disappointment for the Yankees, who were investigating things late for the last 3 days. They were looking at it and obviously just weren't quite able to get around that tax and figure it out. So a little disappointing for the Yankees, big move for the Giants.
One of the other teams that was disappointed because they have a lot of starting pitching injuries right now were the Astros, who are also investigating Blake Snell. Our guest is Joe Espada, the manager of the Astros. We'll talk to him about that. Justin Verlander, Alex Bregman's walk year, just how great Jose Altuve is, the winning culture of the Astros, and more if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. John, I don't know if it was a long national nightmare, but it's over. Blake Snell came to agreement with the Giants, 2 years, $62 million, after a lot of noise about other teams, notably the Yankees, and in this endgame, the Astros. And we'll talk to Joe Espada later, and I'm sure we'll be talking about Blake Snell and his starting rotation. He ends up in San Francisco, which kind of end, by playing the long game and getting Chapman and Snell on pretty good deals late, transformed their offseason.
Absolutely. I mean, they end up spending $300 million, assuming if the players don't opt out, but $300 million, and they end up really transforming their team. They have an outstanding top of the rotation now with Logan Webb and Snell. Webb was one of the two other players, along with pitchers, along with Zach Gallen, to get a Cy Young vote in a year where Blake Snell really dominated. So, great top of the rotation. Obviously, they've upgraded the defense by quite a bit at third base. They added Hicks earlier, Soler earlier. Obviously, they tried for JD Martinez before that, but look, Soler was a World Series MVP. They're getting a lot of decorated players. And, I mean, maybe they're not the Dodgers who spent $1 billion, but the Giants had a great offseason, and they look like a playoff team to me.
You know, it's interesting. They have a shot as this season goes along. Webb has been one of the better starting pitchers in baseball for several years now. Obviously, Snell is coming off a second Cy Young. I think they think they're going to get Alex Cobb back relatively early in the season. I think they think well of Kyle Harrison, their young prospect. And they did trade for Robbie Ray in the offseason. And I wonder if they kind of like, you might end up with a couple of Cy Young lefties on this team late in the year. It changes their dynamic a little bit, John. And one of the things that made me think a lot about, of course, we both work in New York, work for the New York Post, is last year in the National League, the Marlins, the Padres, the Reds, the Diamondbacks, and the Padres won between 82 and 84 games. Three didn't get in and two did. Like, and I kind of feel that underneath the Braves, the Dodgers, the Phillies, there's going to be this scramble again for those last two wild card spots. Somebody will win the Central, and that it's sensitive to doing something like getting Snell or Chapman at this late date. And I wonder if the Giants have kind of strongly pushed themselves into that mid-80 potential that, you know, like I think it's sensitive where, you know, Mets, a bunch of teams in the NL Central. I still think the Padres are pretty good and got better because they did Dylan Cease. It's interesting to see these moves late, Cease, Snell, Chapman really impact the wild card.
Yeah, I mean, we looked at it as a top-heavy league, and certainly I think it is, with the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Phillies look like almost certain playoff teams. But then you've got probably the next tier, all in the National League West. At this point, I think Arizona's really good. San Francisco vastly improved. And San Diego now with Cease, I think they look pretty good too. I think this is going to be tough on the Mets now. I don't know what their analytics say. I know David Stearns said earlier this spring that he felt they were a playoff caliber team. I don't know if he would repeat that at this point. Losing Senga, Giants now gaining a great pitcher in Snell, Padres gaining a great pitcher in Cease. And look, somebody's got to win in that Central, right? I think the Cubs are pretty good anyway, but someone's going to win. So that's a playoff spot too. So At this moment, it doesn't feel like the Mets have a great chance to be in the playoffs now. Of course, who knows what's going to happen in the regular season? It's not predictable. These teams are close enough that the Mets certainly have an opportunity to get in. But right now, on paper, they look behind San Francisco, behind San Diego, and certainly behind Arizona.
John, I do try to stay humble in all this. I don't like, as you know, I don't like predictions to start with. I
I
know,
didn't like my predictions last year, I can tell you that. It's not easy.
it wasn't just you. Any kind of analytic group, any betting system, they had the six teams that made the playoffs out of the National League in 2022, not just as favorites, but as heavy favorites to repeat. And we
Right.
watched the Padres, Mets, and Cardinals all fall apart because, you have a script, and then the season is going to ad lib its way through with injuries, poor performance, strong performance, etc. I'm with you. I mean, I would be certainly on Dodger, Braves, and I kind of really like the Phillies. So I would even be surprised if the Phillies kind of faltered. I think those three, I'm with you. I think Arizona is the best of that next tier of groups. To your point, someone's got to win the NL Central. It means if that all takes place, there's one playoff spot left for San Francisco, San Diego, the Mets, whoever finishes second, third in the NL Central. That's it does become a tougher road for the Mets. And do they solve third base? If they do, things are a lot better for them. Is Marte all the way back? If he is, it's a lot better for them. Is Senga really back on May 1st? If it is, it's a lot better for them. But I'm starting to play a lot of if games. I'm talking to you from St. Lucie. I'm watching it every day. I kind of like what they did this offseason. I think they're going to get into the low to mid 80s. Is that going to be enough?
Yeah, you wonder. That's probably where their metrics have them. I believe it. Probably a slight winning record, but if that's the case, why not go out and do something more? And I get Jordan Montgomery for the Mets. He's going to be $25 million a year or something like that, and with 110% tax, it's another $27.5 million. We're talking $52.5 million for. A pitcher of the Yankees. I mean, obviously Montgomery was much better after he left the Yankees. But they basically, gave up. I wouldn't say gave up on him, but he wasn't going to be even a playoff starter for them. Obviously, he was worthy of being a playoff starter. But to me, I think J.D. Martinez would be a big plus for the Mets. For years, they've been looking for the guy to bat behind Alonso. He's got 1 year to go. You can get J.D. Martinez, I'm sure, on a 1 year deal at this point. To me, that's something they should pursue. I know they've been thinking about it. Steve Cohen's given the go-ahead to go ahead and spend. So good for him because let's say it's 12 million. Yeah, the tax, it's over 26 million at that point. But they're close enough where one or two moves can make a difference. So I think it's worth doing.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure if they'll do Martinez. I'm with you. I kind of think they're not going to do Montgomery, but I wrote it a couple earlier in
Yeah,
spring
you
training.
did.
Is see to me the thing about Montgomery is he begins to help solve a problem for next year as well. If you do it, if you believe in him, you have to believe in him. You have to have kind of gone and look at him maybe in the last few weeks, make sure he's in shape, whatever. You kind of like where he is, but remember. Every member of this rotation, except for Senga, can be a free agent at the end of the season. So the Mets, I know that they're in love with their pitching prospects suddenly here, and they maybe will get one or two guys to pop, but they're still going to be in the market next offseason. And I wonder if you could begin, if you're the Mets, to not be quite as desperate in that market. If you start with the, hey, Senga and Montgomery, now you have kind of like sturdy number two and threes types. If you believe in it moving forward, can you add the four and five from your system? Does somebody like Severino pitch well? Will you want to do something a little longer with him? I just think it gives them some alternatives if they wanted to do it. But I'm spending someone else's money to your point, John. I know he has a lot of it, Steve Cohen, but it's 110% tax. It is a pretty significant number, especially like. You talk about JD Martinez, it becomes a 1 year, $25, $26 million contract. That's a lot for JD Martinez.
It is, but obviously, if you get Montgomery, we're talking going to be with
Yes,
a
double
tax over
that. Yeah.
$50 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, neither you nor I really can conceive of this kind of money, except for we've been covering it for forever. And You can guess at what Steve Cohen is willing to do. Obviously, he was willing to do a lot last year when he set a record with the amount of money that he spent. And this year, they still have the highest payroll. Basically, I think they're a little bit ahead of the Dodgers right now, but they're right up there still. So, it's easy for us to spend other people's money. But yeah, Montgomery would be great. And I mean, they do have pitching prospects, but we've been through this before with the Mets,
Yeah.
right? We don't know who's going to turn out to be a great pitcher, right? I mean, you had that whole group with Pulsifer and Wilson and Isringhausen, right? Isringhausen became a great reliever elsewhere. The other two did not pan out to what was projected. Obviously, we had the group with Harvey and Noah Syndergaard, and obviously they showed flashes and were great for a little while, but as it turned out, as you pointed out in the post, Zach Wheeler became the
Yeah.
real
The guy who didn't
great
pitch in the
pitcher.
15 postseason when they went to the World Series. It turned out
Right.
to be the
So
best. Yeah.
it's very unpredictable, and I know that some of these guys are getting hyped now. They're not getting hyped to the degree. I don't know. What is the hype? Does the hype mean anything anyway? But they're not getting hyped to the degree that Wilson and Pulsifer and certainly Harvey and Syndergaard did. So, I mean, there are no certainties in pitching beyond the fact that you don't know how the talent is going to play at the major league level. The injury factor is enormous, right? The
Right.
attrition rate is incredible. So, every team needs pitching. It would be great. I've not really heard the Mets connected with Montgomery much. I know they were thinking about it at some point, but they think about everything. They investigate everything. It doesn't feel like that's a real possibility. I mean, sure, that'd be great. But again, then Steve Cohen would be setting a new record for payroll with a team that's iffy to get into the playoffs. So, even he, who's been quite generous, I don't see that happening. But hey, you never know in free agency. You don't know what's going to happen. We never expected Snell to be signing on March 18th. Was it 18th? Or Montgomery to still be available at this point. So anything can happen, but I would be a little bit surprised if that did happen.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised also, John. You mentioned pitching injuries. I wonder if we could transition there to the Yankees. Steve Cohen said something interesting the other day because we know how rich Steve Cohen is. He emphasized how darn expensive pitching is. And when you look at the injuries across the landscape, four of the last six Cy Young Award winners, so over the last 3 years, have suffered significant injury and are not available right now. And the other Blake Snell, one of the others, Blake Snell, just signed. And then if you go and look at all the other guys who got Cy Young votes, DeGrom, Scherzer, Brandon Woodruff, Felix Bautista, et cetera, there's a ton of injuries out there with pitching in general and starting pitching in specific. The Yankees, within terrible news, got good news, right? Cole flew to Eliotrash in Los Angeles, and I heard was very concerned and left very relieved that this was a nerve issue that rest and medicine should be able to deal with. And they're hoping he's back by June 1st. It does put the pressure on the other guys, the Rodon, Stroman, Cortez trio, all of whom have been all-stars in the last 2 years. They didn't do Snell. So now even more, it is on them. Do you believe the Yankees kind of survive in advance March Madness, April, and May to get to June to Cole without him?
Yeah, no, I mean, they still have a great offense. I'm concerned. I've been concerned about their pitching depth. Now we're concerned about Cole. Obviously, that was great news that it was a nerve, and they believe that it can be healed with the rest and some medicine and maybe a shot. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Just play one here. But I mean, that was good news. But I mean, they're going in now with Cortez as their top starter, or at least their opening day starter, right? Stroman, looks like the best guy that they've got right now going in spring training. He's done a nice job there. A lot of questions about Rodon. So, I mean, they're not alone with all these pitching questions, but for a team with a $300 million plus payroll, that's a lot of questions. And I can see why they certainly did investigate and consider Snell to the end. It did seem like a long shot over the last few days with that threshold that they're over 297 million, along with the Mets and Dodgers. They are at the 110% tax rate. So 30 million for Snell would have been another 33 million for the Yankees, would have been 63 million. I heard they were doing some creative things. I don't know if it was deferred or how you get around that tax in any way, but Obviously, they didn't figure it out to anybody's satisfaction. I don't even think the Yankees made a counteroffer at the end. And I get it. I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's hard to say that anybody's worth $63 million. But at this point, to me, they don't look like the favorite in their division, much less the league. They said they were, what did they say, hell-bent or all in. I mean, they look like a good team that's got a shot. Do they look any better than, let's say, in Arizona? I'm not so sure that they do, or certainly a Seattle. I'm not so sure that they do. So, I mean, they still have work to do. And I mean, that's a team that to me could use and could spend for Montgomery, but will he come back? Do they want him back? I mean, they traded him away originally because they weren't thinking that he was a playoff starter. It's probably a long shot, but I mean, they got a lot of pitching questions, Joel. I'm really not that confident in the Yankees. I mean, they're going to be a winning team as they always are. They're a good team, but are they hell-bent? Are they all in? Are they great? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I think that as we wrap up here for the team, we're going to talk to the team they're perennially chasing, and it's not even in their division, the Houston Astros. Joe Espada, the manager, joins us in a couple of minutes here. I'll just say this is the other thing is they just don't get over this injury thing, they don't get over it as far as incurring it, and they don't get over in diagnosing it or explaining it publicly. I don't know what's been going on with Judge. This spring training, I know he doesn't like his information out on the street, and I'm sure that makes it very tough for Aaron Boone to disseminate that information. As he tiptoes on not offending his captain and most important player. But the Yankees, John, I'll wrap up this by saying this: I agree with you. There's a depth issue when it comes to pitching, which means their pitching after Cole now has to stay pretty darn healthy, and that's asking a lot of a rotation that has Rodon, that has Cortez, that has Stroman, all of whom have had significant injury as recently as last year. So, especially for the first 60 days of the season, the Yankees need those guys going round and round. A team that is suffering a lot of pitching injuries as well and was in on Blake Snell is the Astros. And as we mentioned, Joe Espada, their manager, will join us next on the show. John, and I'm so happy that Joe Espada, the manager of the Astros, can join us on the show. Joe worked for the Yankees for a long time. We got to know him well there. Bench coach for the Astros for 6 seasons through what has been a dynastic period for Houston. And now this season taking over for Dusty Baker as manager of the Astros. And Joe, it's great timing, right? You guys were in it on Blake Snell until the end, we believe. You're having some pitching issues there. He ends up in agreement as we're talking with the Giants. How close do you think you got to Snell? How badly did you want him and need him?
I'm not so sure how close we got. I wasn't so much involved in those conversations, but I know Dana has worked really hard trying to improve our team, and he's been looking for ways to improve our team throughout the whole entire offseason. But I do believe in the group we have. I think we've been resilient for many years, and I believe in the job that our player development has done for many, many years, developing major league pitchers. So I think we have the pieces in place to replace Urquidy for the time being for JV while he's sidelined. I think we have the pieces to move forward and put a competitive team on the field.
Hey Joe, terrific lineup, incredible back end of the bullpen. But right now, like a lot of the other teams, you've got some rotation worries. Generally, how is your rotation shaping up as you head toward the regular season?
Well, right now we have, Valdez, Javier, Hunter Brown. They're locked, not necessarily in that order, but they're on the rotation. And now we're just trying to see, JP Franz, who just coming back from a little setback in the offseason. He'll pitch here pretty soon, and we'll see how that goes. But Blanco, Bilak, we have those guys in place where they could provide the coverage that we need for the time being. And but I, you know, again, I feel pretty good about those guys stepping in. We've done it in the past. We've been tested before, and I always feel like somebody will step up and somebody, sees this as an opportunity and they always take advantage of it.
You know, McCullers and Luis Garcia feel like maybe, I think when I talked to Dana Brown earlier in spring, he was hoping for a post All-Star game, maybe like an August 1st, like they would both be trades. But you should get Verlander back sooner than that. I wonder if you could give us what he's up to and what his timeline on, and ultimately what his meaning would be when and if you get him back.
Yeah, so his next time on mound he'll be facing hitters. So he's moving along nicely. I feel good at where he's at right now. So hopefully getting him back like 2 weeks into April, mid-April will be fantastic. And you mentioned Garcia and McCullers. They're progressing very, very well. It's surprising how strong and like Luis Garcia has looked in his throwing progression. McCullers, the same thing. Adding those guys, by July will be a huge addition for us. It's like adding two big pieces, during that trade deadline. So I'm very pleased where they are right now and their throwing progression.
Where does Urquidy stand at this point?
So Urquidy's, he'll be no throw for a few days. We'll reevaluate him here in the upcoming days. But hopefully it sounds like it's not something that will keep him out for very long. And hopefully mid-May, will be great if we could have him back. But we're going to be cautious. We're going to make sure that we get it right because we need these guys for the long haul here. Our plan and our goal always is to play late October, but we're going to be cautious. We're going to make sure that we get these guys right and get him back on the mound.
Joe, up till now in Houston, you were the bench coach and advisor trying to help through issues like this. Now you're stepping into really big shoes, right? You're following AJ Hinch. You're following Dusty Baker, who's almost certain to end up in the Hall of Fame. You're following seven straight trips to the ALCS and two championships. How difficult is this for you, and what's the transition like? What's been toughest for you so far?
You know what? Number one is, stay in the present. It's impossible to feel the shoes of a Dusty Baker, right? And AJ Hinch, two wonderful, very successful managers. I gotta be me. I gotta use the experiences I've gained from those two managers, both for all the managers that I have worked for in the past, the Joe Girardis, right? The Aussie Guillens, the many great managers that have been winners, and what things that they did very, very well that I can apply into my relationship with my players, the way they created a winning clubhouse. Those are the things that I taking from them. Those are the things that I, focus on my daily conversation, my daily work. Not get caught up on whose shoes I'm filling and so forth. It's just trying to provide an environment that our players come in and they could be successful. My job is to put these players in a position to succeed. And I've seen what that looks like. And our expectations here are the same. When I joined the Astros, expectations were to win the World Series and things have not changed. Regardless, who's the manager or not, expectations are here. We have a team that is in place to win. We have the pieces to win. We have an owner that is engaged and is involved, and he wants to give us everything that we need to win. So my job is to continue to move forward our winning tradition, and that's what my focus is every single day I go to the office.
Joe, I know you were interviewed by the Marlins and the White Sox and maybe a few other teams, I'm not sure, but the people who knew you best were the ones who gave you this opportunity. Wouldn't it have been easier to be hired by one of those other teams that's rebuilding? I mean, as Joe mentioned, seven straight appearances in the ALCS, doesn't that add some pressure to you?
No, it does not. First of all, I'm grateful for the opportunity because staying here at home, my family super happy that we got a chance to stay in Houston. But no, it doesn't add any pressure. Regardless of where I got the job, it's my job is to win either here in Houston or wherever. If I was given an opportunity somewhere else, but I'm glad that he's here. I'm excited about this opportunity, and my relationship with these players, expectations are continue to be the same. And I'm going to, make sure that our players show up every single day to, play hard. We do the right things every single day. We step on the baseball field, and you know, that's what I'm most excited about. It's just this opportunity to continue this winning tradition. These guys are winners. I know what winning looks like, and I know how to sustain and maintain that winning culture here in Houston.
You talk about the winning tradition. I think I asked you about this during the ALCS last year. This team and this run reminds me the most of the dynastic Yankees as any team. You know, we think of the postseason as a crapshoot, but your team seems to know ways to kind of win rounds in the playoffs.
Yeah.
What is it about this team that it has? There's been a lot of change. You go look at what the championship team was in 17, the roster is today. There's obviously pieces like Altuve, Bregman, Verlander again, but there's been a lot of changeover. There's been multiple managers, and yet the machine has stayed on the rails of kind of championship caliber team. Why? What is it about this organization?
It goes beyond the talent that we have in that clubhouse. You know, undeniable, you know, how good our players are, right? You know, you mentioned Altuve and Bregman, those guys are all-star. We have MVPs. We have future Hall of Famers. We have Silver Sluggers, Gold Glovers. But it goes beyond that. For me, it's the makeup and the character of our team. When our backs are against the wall, these guys have a way to stay calm, confident, united, and they know how to play through those moments. Postseason comes around, and they have a way of turning things on. They've been there before. They stay poised, calm. They know exactly what it takes to win. And it's sometimes it's hard to describe, because unless you are in the clubhouse and you get that feel of like it's go time, it's special how they do it. There's no panic. This is the things that we need to do. These are things that we have done. And if those things are not in place, they have a way to turning things back around. We got to make sure that we play our brand of baseball and not worry about who we playing, who we facing, where we at. It's this very special group. And my job is, again, to continue to push things forward and remind them what makes us such a good baseball team.
Speaking of turning things on in October, let me ask you about a guy who's not very well liked in New York, Jose Altuve. How does he do it? How can he be a home run hitter? I mean, to me, it's one of the most amazing things in baseball.
Man, the level of calmness, how he stays cool under pressure, big moments. He wants to be in those big moments. For you to embrace those moments, you gotta want to be in them. And you know, you just see it kind of building up those big games where you look it down the lineup and you see, okay, Altuve's at bat is coming, and you know something special is going to happen. And the dugout feels it, and he just takes that moment like no one other. I have never seen anyone who can stay so calm, collective, and be able to handle that moment of pressure, turn it into a moment of glory. That's what makes him such a special player. And the fact that we signed him and made him an Astros for life, that speaks volume of our organization, how we value and how much we love and how special is Altuve to the Houston Astros.
I don't think I've liked the line any of our guests have given more than turn a moment of pressure into a moment of glory. That's you should think about becoming a writer if this gig doesn't work out, Joe.
You know, I've been very fortunate to watch him, you know, hit those homers, him and, you know, the Chapman homer and the homer of Leclerc. Like, this guy just knows how to do it. And it's a moment that, you know, I can sometimes I'm sitting down and you could close your eyes and you could think about how it builds up. It's just moments of glory. It's just moments that makes you will never forget for the rest of your career.
You know, you talked about winning players. It feels like Alex Bregman is that kind of player as well on both sides of the ball. I actually think he's one of the most clutch defenders I've ever seen when I watch you guys in the postseason and what he's willing to try and execute in big spots. He's entering his walk year. Traditionally, Scott Boras clients don't get their deals done before they get out into the open market. Do you think you have a shot at doing something with him before then? And if not, how do you think he handles a walk year?
Let's tackle the how he's going to handle the walk year first. I think Alex Bregman is a winner. Alex Bregman wants to win. His entire focus is on our season, and I think he's going to have an incredible 2024. You know, defensively, like you mentioned, how good and how clutch he is, how much he values defense. He wants to be great on both sides of the ball. So my wish, will be that we could keep him around for many, many years. Now, that's the business side of things that I try not to get involved with any of that. You know, if they ask for my opinion, I give it. My desire for him to stay, he's been one of those players that speak to our winning tradition, and we'll love to have him for many, many years. So, you know, we'll see how things work out. But my wish is for him to continue to be an Astro for the rest of his career.
And Bregman's contract is up, and then Tucker's contract is up the following year. Now, the Astros have done a good job keeping a lot of play. I mean, obviously Altuve, but we saw Correa go, Springer went. You know, you may be losing some key players the next year or two. Do you feel like you're in kind of, I mean, seven appearances in a row, let's not diminish that. That's amazing in the ALCS. Is it a bit of a window now for the next couple of years for the Astros, though?
You know, one thing that we've done very well is just replace some of these winning players with winning prospects. You know, Carlos Correa, I remember when he left, we were having the same conversation, and he was going to replace Carlos Correa. So there came, Jeremy Peña. We lose like a George Springer. Here comes Kyle Tucker. We've done that in the past, and I give credit to our player development that we know they could do the job to not only develop good players but winning players, guys that players that understand what it takes to win in Houston. And so I feel good about that, John, that we can replace some of these players if they leave. But I also, know that our owner wants to win and he loves winning and he's not afraid to invest in our future. So hopefully Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman could be here for many, many years.
Yeah, you talk about your owner and what he's willing to do. You weren't able to pull down Snell, but I think you surprised the industry a little by doing Josh Hader, especially at the level that you did him. It means Ryan Presley, who, whether the people listening know or not, is one of the best postseason pitchers in history, relief pitchers, moves into the eighth inning. What does Hader mean to your team and dynamic?
He walked in and he added a little extra energy to our clubhouse. Having him and Presley in the back end with Abreu, it makes, as a manager, it makes you feel really good having the lead past that sixth inning, having those guys to close down the door. But, Hader has his demeanor, his makeup, his toughness is something that we value and we have really got to see here the last couple of weeks. So he just makes us that much better. And you mentioned Presley, one of the best relievers in the postseason, and how important he's been to us and how important it is for us moving forward. And, the way he handled when we brought Hader in, it's very important because he's, he's a professional. He understands what it takes to win. And it was nice to see. It was great to see the way he handled the whole entire transitioning and, welcoming Hader into the team.
I wanted to ask you about managing Verlander. In the New York Post, sometime in the middle of last season, I was in a named quote from some Mets saying that he was a diva. Now, I won't speak for Joel, but he was great for us. I guess he's not that gritty guy like Scherzer, who's into every pitch and helping out all the kids all the time. And, he's a celebrity. He's married to a celebrity. He's a Hall of Famer. It's a little bit different than your average player, right? So how is that going to be for you? And how have you obviously had him there while you were coaching. How have you been with him?
You know what? JV has been great. I, you know, the whole, that whole reporting, I've heard those before, and I have never seen that out of JV. I have a really good relationship with JV. JV is a competitor. JV wants to win. He's a Hall of Famer, and every time he steps on the mound, I feel really good about our chances to win. You know, the celebrity and all that kind of stuff, I can't speak to that because I just have a lot of respect for what JV's done for this team, for this sport, and you know, just excited that he's here and want to get him back on the mound because he just makes everyone around him that much better. And one more thing about you know, when you spoke about, you know, how he can impact the clubhouse and these younger pitchers that we have coming up. You know, I can see him. I see him, like, even during spring training, sitting next to Spencer Arrighetti and connecting and teaching and talking, the Luis Garcias, the Valdez. You know, he does those things, you know, and those things are important for us to continue, you know, to develop these young pitchers. I see it all the time. So those reports and those comments that people have made of JV, I don't share those with whoever made them and whoever wrote them, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I usually don't let John speak for me, but it was fine there. I actually love dealing. I'll swim through a lot of crap to deal with Smart, and Justin Verlander's really smart, and I like talking with him. I certainly talk to a lot of less than smart, so I'll do a lot to talk to Smart. I wonder, as a way to kind of end, we talk about where you're going at the beginning. You're playing the Yankees. You used to work there. You know, there was a time where the rivalry was the Red Sox. Now it feels a little bit like the rivalry is Yankees-Astros, but it feels like old Yankee Red Sox before 04. It's very one-sided. There's one team that's been winning all the very important games since 2015 even, and the wild card. What do you think about the Yankees? They added Soto to your old team. Are they a nemesis, or you can't be a nemesis if you never win in the postseason?
No, you know, I could, like you mentioned, I work for the Yankees, and I have a ton of good friends that work there. And, you know, we always exchanging text messages, especially that, you know, opening series. So it's going to be a competitive series. We have a lot of respect for the Yankees, and we see them as a really good team. And, you know, we get ready for our opponents, and we compete with our opponents like any other team. We don't see the Yankees or the Red Sox or Seattle any different. You know, we just take care of our business. If we go and we prepare and we play our brand of baseball, we're going to find ourselves winning a lot of baseball games. So I try not to spend much time thinking about rivalries or relationship teams that I work for. My job is just to make sure that I prepare our players to play and compete against whoever our opponent is. And, you know, we the first 3 weeks, we have some really good teams that we're going to play against. So, you know, our job is just to hit the field and play our best baseball from day number one.
Joe, if I could just follow up that, but it hit me as you were talking there as a last question here. I believe when you were hired to the Yankees, you were first hired maybe to work in the front office, which means you
Correct.
Were hired by and work for Brian Cashman. And one of the things that comes up a lot for me and John is talking about Brian Cashman, who obviously has become a big target in New York among Yankee fans. What do you think about Brian Cashman?
You know, I have a lot of respect for Brian. I, you know, when I was hired there in 14, I worked closely with him, and you know, I've learned a lot about how the front office, how you put a team together, how player acquisition, player transactions, you know, evaluation of players. I learned a lot about, you know, analytics. At the time, I came from Miami. I wasn't exposed to a lot of that in Miami. Going to New York really got a sense of where baseball was headed. And, you know, I really enjoy my time working on the Brian Cashman leadership, how he involves everyone in the decision-making. He is, you know, he's open to new ideas. And I understood why they've been so successful. I have a ton of respect for him and his staff and the people that he surrounds himself with. So my years in New York were were fantastic. I really enjoy my time there, and I have a really close relationship with a lot of the guys there, because they really open, you know, their arms and embrace me, and you know, they were able to share some of the information, how they do things, and it got me to understand how, you know, to be successful, where to invest, what things that you look for in players. And you know, it was like going to you know, it was like going to college. That's how I feel like. I'm like, wow, you know, these are things that I wasn't aware that how you put a team together. And then I go on the field, and I got to work under a great manager, Joe Girardi, and really great players, great coaches. And so my years there were phenomenal. And you know, but now is I'm an Astro. My job is to lead and beat those Yankees, man.
Well, you start with them about a week from when we're talking now. I think 9 days from now, you open the season against the Yankees. You open your career as a major league manager. Joe, best of luck at that. John,
thank
and
you.
I do appreciate you joining the show.
Thank you, guys.
John and I thank Joe Espada, the manager of the Astros, for joining us. John, for the next to last time in spring training, hit or error?
Well, thank you for letting me go first. I take the most obvious one, and I knocked the Giants last week for the J.D. Davis situation. But right now, I've got to praise the Giants for bringing in Blake Snell. They were a logical team all along to do so, but they have a great 1-2 pitching punch right now. They've had a spectacular winter. You know, I don't know if Bob Melvin is the key or not, but Melvin certainly had Matt Chapman in Oakland. He had Snell for the last couple of years in San Diego. He advocated for both guys. I saw Melvin a couple of days ago over in Scottsdale, and he said that Blake Snell is a very good pitcher and a terrific kid. And at that point, I should have been probably tipped off that he was maybe going to the Giants. But look, they have the money to do it. They have certainly have a stiff competition in the NL West, not only the Dodgers, but Arizona and San Diego as well. And they did the right thing. They ended up bringing in the big fish that was left, Blake Snell. So good for the Giants.
Well, Melvin's prior relationship in Oakland with Chapman and in San Diego with Snell probably had some influence there. He certainly knew the players. Carlos Mendoza knows Jordan Montgomery, for whatever it's worth.
Hey, and the Mets have gotten a lot of Yankees already, right? They've got Severino. They've got Bader. Do we count Luke Voit? I don't know. Joy, there are a few ex-Yankees in the Mets clubhouse.
Yeah. You know, John, I'll just expand on yours for a hit. I know you're surprised that I've been on a roll of hits, but I kind of like what's happened to the NL wildcard potential here with Cease in San Diego, with Snell and Chapman ending up in San Francisco. That has all gotten Bellinger staying in with the Cubs. It's gotten a lot more interesting. It's gotten a lot more sensitive to, like, where does J.D. Martinez end up? Where does, you know, does Montgomery go back to St. Louis? Kind of maybe transforms them even a little more into a team that could get into the mid and upper 80s potentially. I think that race, which was meh at the beginning of spring training, got a lot more interesting as it's gone along, including because someone like, we'll see when the rubber hits the road, sorry for the cliche, like Jackson Merrill really impressed people in center field in spring training with the Padres. Like, that's a new face that's thrown into the mix here that the Padres are trying. You know, so I'll give a hit to the National League playoff picture getting a lot more interesting.
Absolutely. Look, the Padres lost Soto, Snell, and Hader, and they still look pretty good on paper, right? They do a great job procuring talent. Merrill looks fantastic in center field. They tried him in left. He looked good. He tried him in center. Looked even better. This is a career shortstop. You know, I mean, they certainly do a great job with the scouting part of things. And I think there's a good feeling about the Padres there, too. So, I mean, the NL West is really, really tough right now. And overall, I agree with you. The National League, which looked kind of weak beyond the top three, now looks pretty good.
The NL West looks good, and the Rockies. Anyway, John, by the time we talk next week, two of those NL West teams will have played two games against each other in Korea, the Dodgers and the Padres, so the regular season will be off and going. We'll be doing one more show. I think we'll both be in spring training someplace for at least one more week before the regular season. You know, this is the show, podcast from the New York Post. We always thank Jake Brown, Dan Shalom for helping us get through the show as our producers. Don't forget YouTube, the New York Post YouTube page, if you'd like to see the backgrounds of our hotel rooms where John and I are staying this spring
and you
training.
You can see my son is coming in now at 6 o'clock, 6 a.m. now. So
yeah, I got sun already in Florida. There are literally palm trees outside this window. So I'm really
beautiful.
Feeling it. It's the opposite of beautiful. But yes, where I'm staying, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a 5-star rating. Tell us what you think of the show. And please stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.